the winning sound of Network Sports.
Very pleasant good evening to you, and welcome to a very special edition of Mason and Guests. Well, the cricketing world has lost one of its greatest sons, Everton de Courcy Weeks, born February 26, 1925, died today after a long illness, and our hearts are heavy as we mourn the loss of an icon. Good evening, I'm Andrew Mason, and for the next hour, in this very special edition of Mason and Guests, we're going to get reaction from around the world. We hope to go to Jamaica to talk to Jackie Hendricks. We want to get the view of the journalists. Fazeer Mohammed is going to join us. And of course, we can't do anything when we talk about someone like Everton Weeks and not talk to Dr. Ralph Gonzalez, the Prime Minister of St. Vincent and the Grenadines. And already on the line, Noah Lynch. We want to get some reaction from the diaspora as well. We also will be getting some reaction from Ricky Skerritt, the president of Cricket West Indies, and you, of course. We also want to get a comment in relation to the stats. And already we've got a very good friend in Trinidad and Tobago, Risa, waiting to give all the information as far as this great man is concerned. But without any further ado, let's go and talk to Ralph Thorne, QC, of course, MP. He's got a very special tribute. Good evening to you, Ralph.
Good evening to you, Andrew, and good evening to your listeners. Thank you very much.
Yes.
I consider this quite an honor that you've conferred upon me to pay tribute to a great man. And in paying tribute to Sir Everton, I want to reflect on the words of another great West Indian, a great West Indian historian, and indeed a historian of West Indies cricket. And I want to quote him. He said, that is the L.R. James, if life were not so urgent, I would be willing to spend a year talking to a great batsman, asking him questions and probing into all sorts of aspects of his life on and off the cricket field. If he and I hit it off, the result could be a book such as had never been yet written, which psychologists, anthropologists, and psychologists would read more eagerly than cricketers. Such an investigation of Worrell, Walcott, and Weeks would tell us as much about the past and future of the people of the West Indies as it would about cricket. But it will not be done. Late and soon, the world is too much with us. And those were the words of C.L.R. James. But he did not wait on C.L.R., that is, Sir Everton did not wait on C.L.R. James. He himself wrote in his autobiography that he had emerged from the poor of Bridgetown. And indeed, he exceeded C.L.R. James's audience of physiologists, anthropologists, and psychologists. And his audience now included sociologists and political scientists. He did not forget, and he has left a permanent record in which he honestly told us who he was and is. The book, Mastering the Craft, written by Sir Everton, assisted by Sir Hilary Beckles, he said in his tribute, and he opens with a tribute to his mother, and that is significant. And the words she uttered when she came to see him on a rare occasion at a test match at Kensington, and I quote, Sir Everton quotes his mother as having said, little Evie didn't turn out too bad. To Miss Leonora Weeks, he was little Evie. To us and to the world, he became and was a giant of a cricketer, a giant of a man, and a gentleman. Cricket had clothed its participants with the title gentleman and determined that you could not describe yourself as a cricketer unless cricket could also describe you as a gentleman. Under his dear mother's guidance, our hero would have been aware of the social origins of that title. and its association with social nobility. Little Evie must have therefore clothed himself quite literally in a manner that reflected dignity and also endowed his character with the values that reflected honesty, integrity, and decency. Or was this not the advice given to every boy at that time by a mother in those days to avoid disgrace and to go with grace? Let us again quote the words of Sir Everton himself in his autobiography, and I quote, "It was important to me that I was clear on these matters, because when I walked out to Bath to face the uncertainty of the situation before me, I needed to be clear on one thing, that no one out there was superior to me in terms of my self-esteem and self-worth. It had nothing to do with conceit or arrogance. I was encountering men around the world who had greater wealth, more extensive education, and the confident bred of elite upbringing. But in the space called the cricket field, my state of mind neutralized all those advantages and enabled me to perform as an equal." And that was within the field of cricket. On the other side of the boundary, here is Everton again in his autobiography, and he writes, and I quote, "A test cricket mentality is made up of a special blend of attitudes and aptitudes. More often than not, these are forged in childhood, and sometimes they are discernible. You need to believe in your ability, physical, intellectual, and spiritual. The odds of your survival at the crease are not in your favor, and so you need some kind of belief system. Faith, if you will, because some strange things can happen and you need to come up with an acceptable explanation. My childhood was rooted in Christian values and I was socialized as a boy scout to practice them every day in life. It felt at an early age that comprehending all facets of life was beyond one's abilities. I therefore embraced God in order to make sense of the little part of it I had to deal with. Later, I realized as a test player that sometimes you needed a little help from above. One day you would feel that things were working out pretty good, and you would give a nod of acknowledgement. Sometimes the pickings were slim and you would ask the question. I do not believe it important to place yourself in the wider scheme of things and understand you are but a small part of a divine order. Clarity of mind allows you to make decisions that show restraint, discipline, and respect. I learned these things at home, in the club, in school, and in the church. I took them with me like gear onto the cricket field, and I believe they served me well. It was no easy matter being out there in the middle for 10 years, performing at the top of the international game. My mental makeup was as vital to success as any technical skill that I learned in the net." Those were the words of Sir Everton Weeks in his autobiography. I want to say further that when the purists determined that cricket was a gentleman's game, they must have created a mold of definition into which our senior statesman fits perfectly. At our age, many of us cannot claim truthfully to have seen him play. But beyond the boundary, we have seen a life lived with nothing except the ultimate expression in dignity. Those who saw him as a cricketer, they saw dignity. They saw a gentleman. The tragic dimension of sports is that its most accomplished participants often are thrown adrift after retirement. And there is that tragic dimension that many famous sportsmen, after they retire, do not adjust to a life beyond retirement without the trappings of fame, and they do sometimes go adrift. But it is a depth of character that preserves the self-esteem and the social esteem of sportsmen who have left the game. Sir Everton never confronted any such personal crisis upon retirement. He took the best tradition of Barbadian values to the game of cricket and left with those values intact, yet undisturbed by fame. We could not begin to speak of him unless we refer to his sharp wit, and we would not complete a tribute unless we recalled his love for language. He dressed himself with immaculate care, and he dressed his speech with exquisite language. The beauty of his style reflected the depth of his substance on both sides of the boundary. I do not regard his career for its marvel of outstanding statistics. He is a lot more than that. I regard his life for being of the finest example to bequeath to young cricketers and to young men of this region. It is one of life's fair bargains that cricket gave to Sir Everton de Courcy Weeks his fame, and in turn, he gave to cricket its dignity. I thank you.
All right. Thanks very much indeed, Ralph Thorne, MP, and of course, QC, for your wonderful tribute. Well, of course, we've got already on Zoom Dr. Don Marshall, who, of course, is from the University of the West Indies, the cricket enthusiast. I also want to welcome my very, very good friend, Noah Lynch, the ambassador in Washington. And we also want to get the perspective of a journalist, Fazir Mohammed, has joined us. And we want as well, very soon, to welcome the Minister of Sports in Jamaica, the Honourable Babsy Grahams. I think she should be on the line pretty soon as well. But let's go and get a tribute from Dr. Don Marshall. Good evening to you, Doctor.
Yes, good evening, and thank you very much, Andrew, for inviting me to join you via Zoom today. I want to say that I want to speak for myself, but I want to also acknowledge that I am not alone when I speak. I really do speak from a space that is familiar to everyone, known as the University of the West Indies, and it's from that space that not too far away from where my office actually is, stands the 3W's Oval, and not too far away from there stands the bust of the 3W's. It would be remiss of me not to acknowledge that the efforts of the current Vice Chancellor and the efforts of R. and Francis Edwards to ensure that there's a lasting tribute to the 3W's, including now the late Sir Everton Weeks, because they both recognized the excellence that they brought to bear in their craft and in their life examples. So just now, the Honorable Ralph Thorne would have paid very good tribute to, and there were some resonances there about his dignity and so on, that, and his excellence, even though he didn't quote statistics, but his life example is what I enjoy most in the tribute paid by Ralph, and I want to echo those sentiments. And just simply to say that Sir Everton Weeks embodied for me one of the greatest cultural figures coming out of Barbados. It's not just that he was excellent in the game of cricket, but his existential wisdom, his Bayesianisms, his street smarts, his reach for not just fine language, but there was the witticism and the wisdom that he utilized to express very complex things amazed me. I'll give you one anecdote before I yield. Last year, in January, there was a Vice Chancellor game against the touring English team. In that, the Vice Chancellor invited a number of persons to join him at the 3W's Oval as part of his guests. And however the seating arrangement turned out, I was next to Sir Everton Weeks. I admit that I was a bit starstruck because I never really had a conversation with Sir Everton Weeks beyond polite questions and polite greetings. And I just used to stand in awe at his sartorial splendor, his ease with language, just the sophisticated sophisticated touch and so on. But here it is that we were literally shoulder to shoulder. And there was this particular spinner on the vice chancellor team bowling at the current captain of the England team. And I saw Sir Everton twitching and rolling his fingers as if imitating an off spinner. So I just said to him, after we got through the pleasantries, I said to him, do you think he's getting sufficient turn? He says, no, he's rolling the ball. He isn't turning it much. And so I said, is that why you're ripping your fingers? He says, it's important to spin the ball, impart spin on the ball. That's what he was saying. But then as I was watching the young guy playing for the Vice Chancellor 11, my mind was casting back to what it must be like for any young cricketer trying to make an impression, not only on his team, but on spectators, the ilk of Sir Everton. So I said, Sir Everton, when you were a young player playing in the West Indies team, just called up and so on, how did you manage that? How did you process that? He said, well, after saying a few things, I said, what about preparation for the actual game? He said, well, I remember very well that in my first two test series, there were a lot of spinners. And I learned pretty quickly not to face Valentine in the nets. I said, Valentine? He says, yes, the Ramadan and Valentine. I made sure I didn't face Valentine in the nets because he had a way of making the senior batsman look silly. The ball would go one way and then it would go the nets. And I figured I was too young to face him. I'd rather take my chances against the opposition rather than to be mesmerized by this local bowler who could shatter one's confidence in the nets. Sure enough, he was successful, and he turned out to be more successful than his senior counterparts. And he said, that was a little trick I kept to myself. Don't face Valentine because he looked too good. And it taught me a lot about his character, because it's one thing to speak about a person's wiles and a person's street smartness and so on, but to hear Sir Everton casting his memory back as a young debutant playing for the West Indies and working out quite well, that he didn't think he had the skill set to handle going into the nets and facing an experienced bowler like Valentine, who was part of the squad. I thought that was a fascinating insight. Mm. And I then turned to ask him whether or not young cricketers approach him to learn these little tips about how one prepares mentally to go into battle. And, he said that there's some that come to him and so on, but he says it's important to mentally start playing your innings before you actually get to the test ground and you actually play. So I just wanted to share that anecdote with you and those that are listening.
Okay. Well, Doc, I want to thank you very much indeed for coming through and talking to us, and enjoy the rest of the evening. And no doubt you'll continue to listen to the show. Thanks to you, Dr.
Thank
Don
you.
Marshall.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank
time you. Is very tight. We're going to go to Jamaica now and speak to the Minister of Sports, the Honorable Babsie Grahams. We're just trying to see if we can connect with her. We've also got Fazia Mohammed on the line, and of course, Noah Lynch, the ambassador there in Washington. Can we go and speak to the Honorable Minister in Jamaica? Can we? All right. We just try to see if we can make that connection. Ronnie, we know you can do your technical stuff. Okay, let's go to Washington and speak to Noah Lynch. Noel, your tribute to the great man, Sir Everton Weeks.
Good evening, Andrew. I hope you can hear me. Good evening to all your guests.
Loud and clear.
I feel extremely honored that I've been afforded this opportunity to say a little about Sir Everton Weeks. The news of Sir Everton's passing has been received with great sadness here in Washington, D.C., particularly amongst the Corps of Ambassadors and the Barbadians that make up the Barbados Association of Washington, D.C. The few Barbadians with whom I've had the opportunity to speak and to communicate, many of whom would never have seen or known Sir Everton, knew of and celebrated his greatness, even though they come from a younger set that would never have seen or even seen him on the field of play. The Corps of Ambassadors here, the Caucus of Ambassadors, the CARICOM Ambassadors, who are of a particular vintage, as you can imagine, are all very saddened by his passing. One ambassador in particular, the dean of our corps, simply stated, "What a huge loss for our Caribbean civilization. He was a great man." That is how he summed it up. My own recollection of Sir Everton, whom I never saw on the field of play, are also of a great and humble man. And I will give you an anecdote near the end about one of the engagements I had with him. But just let me say the humility that this man displayed was beyond measure. The highway of humility as it relates to great athletes, or even here in Washington in the political sphere, is not very heavily trafficked. And therefore, to be in the presence of such a great man with such humility goes beyond everything that we can imagine. So Everton stands out for his exploits on the field of cricket. However, his acts inspired a generation of Barbadians and West Indians, coming at a time when Black people globally were struggling for recognition. I've always thought that Sir Everton's feats, when I heard of the records that he set on the field, apart from the 50-year average and the five centuries, I always thought that his exploits paralleled those of Jesse Owens in the 1936 Berlin Olympics, because he really set the world on fire as it relates to Black people. His overall style, his class were exemplary in every way. And it's interesting how we are reminded of Sir Everton's exploits and what he did for Black people at the time and Black West Indians at the time when he was doing all he did on the cricket. How they really connected with a struggle that is even going on even today for Black people in America. I think it is an outstanding contribution to placing Black people at another level, Black, brown, and brown people at another level that they would never have had the opportunity to replace. I'll say one more thing. During my time as the CEO, the Chief Executive Officer of the Barbados Cricket Association, one day Sir Everton came into our offices and was there. He sat and he always conversed about cricket. Mostly we talked about cricket. But he looked so young, so able, so well put together, even at the age when he had just approached 90. And I asked him, you know, Sir Everton, what do you attribute this longevity to? And he said, "Lynch, I have never met a human being that I have not loved." He said, "I've never met a human being that I have not loved." And I think that said it all for me in terms of how this man approached life, how he approached other human beings, and what he wanted other human beings to get out of life. Mm-hmm. Andrew, I really do thank you for being given this opportunity to speak about this great man. And I really want, on behalf of the Corps of Ambassadors here in Washington, mm-hmm. and on my own behalf and my family, to really extend condolences to Barbados and the rest of the Caribbean. We have lost an icon. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. So Ambassador Noah Lynch, Ambassador, of course, in Washington. Let's go to the land of wood and water, one of my favorite countries, and talk to the Minister of Sports, the Honorable Babsy Grange. She is up and she has her tribute. Good evening to you, Minister.
Good evening. Yes. Can you hear me okay?
We are hearing you loud and clear.
Okay. Very good. Good evening, Khalid. West Indies, and in fact, the entire cricketing world is regretting the passing today of one of the greatest exponents of the game, Sir Everton de Courcy Weeks. This cricketing hero has left us at age 95. Almost scoring the century of life to add to the several that he scored in his illustrious cricket career. Everton was born into humble circumstances in his native Barbados, rose to take his place among the finest batsmen ever to play the game. Starting his test cricket career at the same time as Frank Worrell and Clyde Walker, two other great West Indies greats, it was not surprising that they were dubbed the Three W's. and that there would be a three W's oval named in their honor. Weeks with Worrell and Walcott have been the greatest trio of cricketers to play for the West Indies in the same side. It would have been hard to conceive that a batsman could score five test centuries in consecutive innings. But Everton Week did so in his first series against India, setting a record that still stands. 7.5 centuries in consecutive test matches was also another record of his. Throughout his career, Sir Everton notched up 15 test centuries, but was no slouch in the field either, as he was regarded as one of the best slip fielders in the world. Having gone on to be a successful coach, only demonstrated his total commitment to the game of cricket. As we all know, Sir Everton received a plethora of awards, including the OBE and the Barbados Gold Crown of Merit, culminating with his being knighted by the Queen. Without any doubt, he played a magnificent innings, not only for his native Barbados, but for the entire Caribbean and indeed the game of cricket. As Minister of Culture, Gender, Entertainment and Sport, representing Jamaica here this evening, we join with Barbados and the rest of the Caribbean in celebrating the life of this giant of a sportsman. May his soul rest in peace and light perpetually shine. Let's cherish the memory. Let's cherish all the great things we knew about him. And let's continue to celebrate his life and his legacy. Thank you.
Thank you too as well, Minister, and enjoy the rest of your evening. I'm sure here in Barbados and by extension in the Caribbean and throughout the world, we thank you for your wonderful tribute.
Thank you so much. God bless you all.
God bless you all as well. All right. How was Everton Week seen by the journalists? We have to go to our top journalists. Let's join my very good friend Fazeer Mohammed.
That was nice, Minister.
Hi, Andrew. Good to be with you once again. And just going by what we heard from Ambassador Lynch as to the measure of Sir Everton's long life being the fact that he never met someone that he didn't love. I think I'm living on borrowed time, even at the age of 55, because I wish I had that sort of a generosity of spirit. But I had the privilege, obviously, for most of us, we would not have seen Sir Everton in his cricketing prime. But I had the privilege to meet him for the first time as a ball-by-ball cricket commentator in 1995 when Trinidad and Tobago were playing Barbados at Kensington Oval. Those were the days, Andrew, when the commentary box was at the other end of the ground, as you well recall. And indeed, I was part of the CBC commentary team. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to mention CBC in the midst of a VOB broadcast at a VOB station, but it is what it is. And very early on, when I realized I was sitting next to Sir Everton Weeks, I was almost paralyzed with fright, being fearful of saying the wrong thing. And within a matter of seconds, I was saying something or the other, and just trying to impress the great Sir Everton and so on, talking about the wicket and what sort of wicket how the wicket is going to play. And he said, very, very crisp, quiet tones, "Young man, what you're speaking about is the pitch, not the wicket. The pitch, the wicket are those three stumps 22 yards apart. What you're talking about is the wicket." And I felt, okay, well, if this is just the first over of ball-by-ball commentary for a scheduled 4 days, this is going to be a nightmare. It turned out to be an absolute dream because I realized that, yes, he might have been a stickler for accuracy and detail and precision and so on, but he was also an enormously generous man. Very humorous, very witty. And indeed, when you heard Sir Everton speaking, when you saw the images of him in his batting prime with the hair neatly parted and so on, it basically made you understand that Sir Everton Weeks, the man, told you about Sir Everton Weeks, the batsman. Very precise, very neat, very stylish, very accurate, very committed, very dedicated. And it was my great privilege, Andrew, and I have to thank you for that, because you would have facilitated my opportunity to be on that commentary team, to have had the opportunity to meet truly one of the legends of the game. Because one of the things we do far too easily, somebody scores 50 runs, somebody hits two sixes, somebody scores a goal, suddenly they're a legend. Suddenly they're the greatest thing in the world. Sir Everton Weeks, as we saw whenever the Indians were in town, because remember he averaged over 100 against India and had that world record, five consecutive hundreds, four of them were against India. And when India were in the Caribbean and Sir Everton was around, the Indian journalists would almost forget about the cricket that was going on in front of them. And just imagine an Indian journalist turning away from cricket when maybe a Tendulkar would have been batting and chasing after Sir Everton Weeks just to get a word with him or to get a picture with him, get a selfie with him and that sort of thing. So in essence, I think the numbers are enormously impressive. Let's not forget that Sir Everton averaging 58 is at least 20 runs better than our best batsman right now in England. And that gives us a sense as to the huge gap in class that we're talking about when we speak about someone like a Sir Everton Weeks. And we can only speculate if he and his like, Sir Clyde Walcott, Sir Frank Worrell, had he lived and so on, if they were playing international cricket in the modern era, when there's so much cricket being played, what would have been the tally of runs of someone like a Sir Everton Weeks to have played 100, 150 test matches and so on? But that is just speculation. But I think in summing it up, Andrew, and I couldn't possibly sum it up as well as some of your other guests, but I would just simply say that having had the privilege to be in the company of Sir Everton Weeks, to actually be able to sit side by side with him and to be considered as a contemporary, even if it was only in radio commentary, nothing to do with cricket, because there's no way I'm going to even mention my name anywhere when compared to his cricketing skill. That to me will remain as one of my lifelong treasured memories in the game. And I'll always carry him with me, because every time I mention the pitch, I'll remember Sir Everton Weeks, Andrew.
Well, I want to thank you very much indeed, Fazir Mohammed, and continue to say the pitch and not the wicket. It really was a pleasure to have you on the show, and have a good evening.
You too, Andrew, and indeed, condolences to everyone associated with the great Sir Everton. And trust me, he might be gone in body, but his legacy will live on for a very long time. It will outlive all of us, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you very much indeed. All right, let's go to St. Vincent and the Grenadines and speak to the Prime Minister, the Right Honourable Dr. Ralph Gonsalves. All right, time is tight. We've got, of course, our very good friend Risa Abbas Ali on the line. He's got some very important information in terms of stats, because we want to look at Everton through the eyes of the statistician. But before we bring you, Rasa, on, let's go back to the land of wood and water. We heard from the Honourable Minister earlier. Let's go to a titan as well and speak to Jackie Hendricks, who, of course, would have known Everton very well. Good evening to you, Jackie. How are you?
Hi, Andrew. How are you, man?
Right. What a loss. We've lost the great man today, Everton, De Courcy Weeks.
Yes, it's a very, very sad day, certainly as far as I'm concerned. I was one of the great admirers of Sir Everton, and fortunately I got to know him pretty well later on in life. And I have always, with a lot of criticism, I have always felt that my two batsmen who I have seen was Sir Gary Sobers and Sir Everton Weeks. Those are my two top batsmen for the West Indies of all the time that I have seen any cricket. And so, you know, it's a particularly sad departure for me, because, as I said, not only as a batsman, but also as someone who I have had a lot to do with. We sat on the West Indies Cricket Committee, I think in the early 2000s, I think it was, and you know, we shared a lot of memories, and I can remember asking him once he played a magnificent innings against Jamaica in, I think, about 62 or 63, somewhere in that vicinity. And I was talking to him the other day, and I was saying, Sir Emerton, do you remember that innings you played against us at Kensington? And Everton's reply was, I don't know, I only remember somebody behind me saying, great shot, Everton. And so I think that that is quite true, actually. I was a great admirer, I must tell you. And, you know, I saw him in the first of his five consecutive centuries in Jamaica in 1948. I skipped school to come down to Sabina Park, and I saw Sir Everton get his 141. But I must tell you that in Jamaica, the big choice was that we wanted J.K. Holt to play, but Everton was selected. He did not arrive at the ground until after lunch, having had a late call up, I think, from Barbados, and the crowd gave him a round booing, because of course J.K. Holt was our man. And I did say to Everton some years back, I said, you know, Sir Everton, I must admit, I was one of those people in the crowd that booed, because J.K. Holt was our man. Mm. And he laughed, and he said, well, I hope you have changed your mind.
Wonderful memories there of the great man, Sir Everton de Courcy Weeks.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's a very sad day. And having lost Seymour not too long ago, it comes home to you. It really does. Mm-hmm. And I wish his family and friends and all the people in Barbados, I condole with them. He was a great man.
Mm-hmm. Well, we want to thank you very much indeed for coming through and talking to us. Jackie Hendricks, the former West Indies keeper, giving a tribute to Sir Everton Weeks. How do we see Sir Everton through the eyes of the statistician? Let's go to the land of Calypso and speak to Rasa Abbas Ali. Good evening to you, sir.
Oh, good evening, Andrew. Are you hearing me?
We're hearing you loud and clear.
Oh, excellent, man. It's an honor to be here on this platform with your prime ministers, your ministers, prominent journalists, and of course, you know, former cricketers. It's really an honor to commemorate the life of this outstanding West Indian, Andrew Mason.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what do you have for us in terms of stats?
Let's have a look at this. His test career lasted from 1948 to 1958. He played 48 test matches, Andrew. 4,455 runs, a highest score of 207 against India. A test average of 58.61. 15 test hundreds, 1950s. He took 49 catches. But let's break down quickly those test matches, and it's really outstanding figures, Andrew Mason. On the 48 test matches against Australia, 10 tests, 1,714 runs, an average of 39.67. I want to thank howstat.com for this. Against England, 17 test matches, 1,313 runs, an average of 45.28. Against India, 10 test matches, highest score of 207, 1,495 runs with an outstanding, unbelievable average of 106.79. Against New Zealand, 6 tests, 156 highest score, 478 runs, an average of 59.75. And lastly, against Pakistan, highest score 197, 455 runs, an average of 65. Total 48 test matches, 4,455 runs with an overall average of 58.62, Andrew Mason.
Wonderful, wonderful stats there. And, you know, we are so happy to have you on the line, because people want to know that information in relation to Severton Week. So we want to thank you very much, Mr. Ali, for coming through and providing that information. Now, Cricket West Indies...
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much indeed. The Cricket West Indies, their president, we're talking about Ricky Skerritt. He's got his tribute as well.
I never had the opportunity to see Sir Everton bat, but I had the opportunity to get to know him in his elderly years. And I got the opportunity to read about him and to look at videos of him when I could. A most amazing pioneer in West Indies cricket, a tremendous gentleman, a just simply wonderful human being. I got to spend a couple hours with him last year, just sitting and talking with him when he had just recovered from a serious illness where he had been hospitalized. Such a humble and genuine human being. I have always respected his cricket career, even though I never saw him, but I got to love him even more and to respect him even more as a gentleman. May he rest in peace, and may the Caribbean understand that he was literally a founding father of our cricket.
Mm-hmm. So there you have it, the president of Cricket West Indies, Ricky Skerritt. Of course, we couldn't go without hearing the voice of the great man, Sir Everton Weekes, and let's join Paul Mears.
Sir Everton Weekes, in probably one of his final interviews, spoke with Erskine King about an innings he played with the late Sir Frank Worrell.
One story stands out in my mind was that we were playing against Leicestershire in 1950, and at tea time I was 25 not out and had already batted 35 minutes, and Frank and I were sitting next to each other, and he said to me, you know, I think against this attack you should be able to make the fastest 100 of the season. I said, but I've already batted 35 minutes and I'm 25. What makes you? He said, well, I'll give you the strike anyhow. Well, if I didn't have a lot of admiration for him, I would have thought that he was going to give me a strike to get out, for me to get out, sort of thing. But at that stage, Frank was 190, and I was 25 at tea time, and I'd already batted 35 minutes. I got the next 75 minutes, 75 runs in 25 minutes, and which meant that I'd made 100 runs in an hour. At the end of the day's play, Frank was 220 or 30, and I was 190. And the skipper, John Goddard, thought, well, he would let me get the other 10 runs to get the 200. And the next morning we went out, and Frank did not give me strike. It took me 40 minutes to get 10 runs. And the reason for that was he thought that the extra 10 runs didn't make a lot of difference, that we should have given ourselves enough time to bowl out the opposition twice, which we did in the end, so it didn't matter that I'd got the other 10 runs. But we must have batted a long time together in that particular innings, in that match. But the day before, to give me all the strike, and then the morning, to get 160 minutes, and then to for you to take 40 minutes to get 10 was quite a contrast, you see. And at the end of each over, he was nudging this ball for a single and making it look very obvious for the captain to declare, you see. So we still had a lot of fun, although, and I got £100, I think, and a clock. I shared the £100 with the team, and I kept the clock for the fastest 100 of that season.
The voice of the late Sir Everton Weekes, truly a Barbadian hero. On behalf of the Starcom Network, we extend condolences to his family and friends.
Indeed, thanks. Wonderful work done by Paul Mears. We couldn't leave the show without finding out what Sir Everton Weekes means to the historian. And we found Trevor Marshall. Trevor, good evening to you.
Good evening, Andrew, and my heartfelt sympathy and condolences. I mean, it's one thing to lose Pat Hoyas, but to lose Everton, a superlative human being, is, you know, it is really heart-wrenching. Now, the Everton I knew, Sir Everton, he was always Sir Everton, Mr. Weekes to us. I saw him at Kensington Oval 1958 against the English. That shows you how old I am. I saw him captain the Barbados Colts, who included a young Charles Griffith. But he was always a legend, and he even before that, after that, 1958, yes. I attended law school, and he became our cricket coach immediately after retiring. And I must say, a particular set of boys called him Everton, which I thought was presumptuous on their part. But we of a different skin tone called him Mr. Weeks. And it is unimaginable. He was obviously working class. He didn't have a car, etc. But he was urbane. He always minded his manners. He knew his place. He was not, he didn't kowtow to anybody of a different tone, shade of skin. And that was the mode of behavior at the time. So Everton knew his place, but he behaved as though he was a prince. And he did not quarrel. He did not shout. I've never heard him lift raise his voice. And the next thing was him as a cricketer. Oh, of course, the smashing cover drive. All of the strokes along the ground. I think he only ever hit 1-6 in his entire cricketing life, which was like Bradman. But I did not see him do that. I saw him only limitedly. And then he gave up. He was part of the team which beat Pakistan, the smithereens. He retired thereafter, and he became a cricket captain of Barbados and a coach. Of course, he went to Empire, and you saw him. And not only was he an efficient run accumulator, but he was always, I hate to repeat myself, urbane. You never heard him cursing, using swear words, or getting beside himself in anger. He was always that person, like Clive Lloyd, later, a right-handed Clive Lloyd, in terms of his being a patriarch to the younger people. Of course, he passed on his cricketing genes to David Murray, and then to Ricky Hoyt, and we saw them, all them bow-legged, just like Sir Everton. And we saw him grace the cricket commentary arena. And there again, without any training, he paved the way for people like Andrew Mason and Fazir Muhammad, both persons who did not reach the heights in cricketing glory, but he cultivated persons who could play cricket and who could absorb the nuances of the game. And he had a beautiful turn of phrase. And he reminded one of John Arlott. Not as voluble as John Arlott, but really the pithy phrase. And you could see that he knew his game inside out. And in bridge, he moved from cricket to bridge. And there he kept his urbanity. And he captained Barbados cricket team at bridge. So he goes out with two major innings, one in cricket and one in bridge. I think the only man to captain Barbados in two sporting arenas and two sporting forms. I never had anything but the greatest of respect for Sir Everton. And he never forgot his face. He was young Marshall, and how are you peregrinating in the world of history? I don't remember you giving much promise as a batsman, and you bowled a bit, but one could see that you would be a historian. And that was praise enough from him. And he kept faith with all of us who knew him as Mr. Weeks and who admired him and for whom he was a role model. And he gave us so many words of praise and acclaim. We sent people from university to interview him, and he always was a soul of graciousness. And a retiring person, a very private person, and there was never any scandal associated with him, both during his playing days and afterwards.
Wonderful indeed. We really want to thank you very much indeed, Trevor Marshall, for coming through. We had to get the eyes, of course, of the historian. And of course, Ralph Thorne at the top of the program. We heard from Jackie Hendricks, Fazia Mohammed, through the eyes, of course, of the journalists. And we went to Jamaica, the land of wood and water, and spoke to the Honourable Babsy Grange, the Minister of Sports. And of course, we also spoke to Noah Lynch, the Ambassador to Washington. And it was really great to hear from Rasa Abbas Ali, who, of course, is the man in relation to the stats. Batsman, coach, footballer, bridge player, and certainly a wonderful father. He was certainly a great, great individual. And from Bank Hall in Bridgetown to Lahore in Pakistan, they all must know that men of wealth are envied, men of power feared, men of genius admired, but like Sir Everton, only men of character are trusted. May he rest in peace and rise in glory.